Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this. I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopelessness, the meager food for soul for God. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
And welcome to a Flippin' Philo Wednesday here on Blog Talk Radio. Radio! I'm feeling kind of funky. Kind of overslept, underfed, one of those things. Because everything's gone pretty much into the old crapper in the last couple of days. When last we joined you, my hockey team was in the happy place. Last Wednesday night when we had Frank Mosca here steering us toward positivity. And somebody forgot to read page 42 of The Secret, apparently, and they choked away the series. Falling to the Capitals and Ovechkin and the Ruskies last night in Game 7. I have hockey residue. Anybody that was up watching both those games last night, actually, because the New Jersey Devils had a similar and actually intricately more painful fate, being able to close out the series at home and in the last 90 seconds, not only giving up the tying goal, but then 14 seconds later giving up the series clincher. It was horrible. And I hate the Devils. There's a hate there. I can look to New Jersey right now and whoop, I could be sending the hate. Hate the Devils. But in the aftermath, watching Marty and all the other little Devils in the same sort of fetal position that my Rangers were in not 20 minutes earlier, I felt a certain simpaticum for these beaten Devils, and I actually began to get a little misty. A little hockey catharsis going on there. You know, you watch a team die, you think about it, what they go through. Not just the, that team, that version of that team. It's always, you know, you root for the uniform and stuff. Because there's a deep trans-identification with these sports teams. Maybe one day we'll get into that here. We'll get somebody on from the sports soma side of the coin to talk about that. Because being a fan is short, of course, of being a fanatic. And if you're a fanatic in any other realm, you're singled out, you know, religion, politics, things like that. The fanatics are not usually courted to, but in our culture, sports is okay to be a fanatic. And that's what was, you go through that almost that sort of little death when your team gets ousted like that. And it sticks to the ribs. I'm 24 hours removed from it. Yeah, this time last night, we were at a 1-1 tie, and could have went either way. So when you deal with loss in any realm of life, there's that certain void that's there, and you go through a little recovery, a little bounce back. But how can you bounce back right now when the flu is everywhere? I just learned, Bertie told me, that the local nursery school here in Larchmont will be closed for the next 2 days because somebody went to school with the flu. Was diagnosed in Mexico twice as having no sign of the swine flu, or the bird flu, or the Chinese flu, or any other flu, just, you know, the flu. And kid went to school anyway, mysteriously. And people, of course, were alarmed, and they are closing the school for a couple of days. The difference between public health policy and personal health decisions is not a small difference. Because as I put my ear to the ground, listen to this stuff last couple of days, I'm here with any of your opinions about this swine flu garbage at 646-478-4847. I'd be glad to punch you across the universe with any of your fears, is that the public health policy is about protecting the well, the unsick, from the sickies. Not about servicing and caring for the sick which would be the private health decision category. So it is one of those things of the vital few and the trivial many. And now we're a couple days from fly over here in New York City, where one of Obama's people decided it'd be a good idea to do some publicity shots of Air Force One, or one of those federal planes, going over New York City. What are they thinking? What are they thinking? And, of course, they didn't tell the mayor till the morning of, and, of course, he had a fit. And so we had that little distraction. Then yesterday, right, Spectre crosses over to the dark side. Republicans wash their hands, their feet. Oh, you got to do that because of the flu. Of him. And I was listening to Rush Limbaugh driving around today, who basically is now taking the position that it is the... And why do they do this? It's so annoying. The Democrat Party. No, it's Democratic. Democrats. Democrats with a little S. Democratic. Right? Oh, makes me so mad with the Democrat Party. Democratic Party. Republican Party. Can we get that straight? Anyway, it's his position that it is the left. So it says it with disgust in his voice. Those on the left are more prone to being uniform and being of one voice and being more of a pure extreme party than it is the right, who was doing what? The teabagging thing a couple weeks ago, right? So again, all of this swimming around in the data sphere, and yet nobody is really talking about the inside story, which we're going to get into tonight with our guest in a couple minutes as he calls in from parts unknown out west. Because one of the things that bugs me about just about everything, actually, is that when these cultural balloons get, you know, kind of floated, and we're seeing it now. We have the economy. We have the swine flu, of course, is all over the place. Oh, no, not a sneeze. Oh, sorry, it's warding off. And all that push to get your attention on things that make you feel fear. That's all it's about. They're only going to be able to sell fear to who buys fear. And if you buy fear, of course, your immune system says, bye-bye, because you begin to not move in harmony with your environment. The fundamental principle of somatics, which is that science nobody heard of, that dare not speak its name. So in honor of that, and in honor of the hockey playoffs, actually, I'm going to bring back a little song from the 80s by Biz Markie to commemorate that. That maybe will give you a little memory of how to deal with somatics. So all let's try to do. Don't fear the flu. Don't run away from the environment. Keep breathing, sapiens. Because really, the world outside does not have an agenda to rid you of the planet. Trying to promote harmony of all the organisms, even the microorganisms. But we must be a good host for the germ. And the germ does not overproliferate and begin to consume the organism that is its host, thereby killing itself too. Kamikaze that the viruses are. They don't have nucleuses, though. We can't really judge them. Because really, that's what it's about. So Biz Markie says,
You got what I need, but you say he's just a friend, and you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need.
There you go. All right, so the swine friend is in town. All over New York City, he's hanging around the elementary schools at this point. But, you know, if we made it that way, because you imagine the type of fear and panic in the streets that went, the swine friend is being transmitted. Oh, Mexico, and it's coming across the border. The friend has been seen, because they talk about it as if it's like something you could see in the sky, like a flock of birds. The virus! And their solution is always the same. Wash your hands. It's like your mother. Wash your hands, clean your mouth, don't talk to anybody, don't sneeze on anybody. You know, don't take public transportation. You got what I need. Could you imagine if, I mean, again, this is a culture with over 300 million people. Somebody's got to sneeze. You know, people are going to be diving into the aisles if somebody sneezes. I was at a 7-Eleven today, and I had to run outside because I was going to sneeze. I went, I want to scare everybody. All right, our guest is here. Let me get the horn. Here we are. Okay, so joining us from way out west in the land of fruits and nuts, California, we have Scott Nichols from somaticintegrity.com, somatic-in.com for those keeping score at home. Welcome to Somatime, Scott.
How are you?
I'm dancing. We got the swine friend going on out here.
Actually, I'm in Bellingham, Washington, the Pacific Northwest.
How come I thought you were in California? I don't understand.
Nah, you know, fruits and nuts are definitely down there. I think we're more like granola.
Yeah, you're sort of Vermont West for us.
Yes, right? Yes, exactly.
Hiking, Birkenstocks, patchouli, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've been out there. I've been out to Portland. Actually, I love that city with the trolley cars and all that stuff. It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That huge bookstore, I got lost in there.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing, that bookstore, Powell's.
Yeah, it's one of those bookstores where there's several floors, and you basically can spend part of your summer there, and no one will ever find you because it's so big.
Right. So
welcome to the program. I just want to know, there hasn't been any swine flu seen in Oregon yet, that they've been, you know, that they don't have the National Guard out on the shore yet, do they?
In Washington, no, there's not. No swine flu.
Okay. Because we're New York City, of course, we're being ravaged. There's about 30 cases, I think. And I just mentioned that my local nursery school over here is going to close the next couple of days because they sent a kid to school that had a flu, but it wasn't a swine flu. But just in case, we're going to fumigate the place. And it's one of these things that I was talking about before. The fundamental aspect of somatics is the relationship between self and surroundings. And it seems as if the surroundings get a bad PR.
Yeah,
In the mainstream culture, because anytime anything goes on in the surroundings, the selves get very nervous. And if you think about it, extending it to the interior environment, you know, what does the mainstream allopathic culture do? They put stuff into the things that surround the cells and the tissues and the organs in the bloodstream and try to, again, the environment runs the organism to almost, in a sense, sort of play God. And, in terms of, we know what to put in your bloodstream to make everything work right. The intelligence that runs the system is not really given much credence. Actually, it gets blamed for being defective more than anything else. That's why all these people are getting sick, you know. So I get very rhetorical when these big scares go out there. And I'm not sure. You guys are sort of holistic and a little bit more self-sufficient out there in the West Coast than we are here in the East Coast, where drugs rule the world. What do you think the number one question I'm getting from clients, neighbors, and passersby as this thing has sort of, in a way, gone viral in the culture? Really, the number one question I'm getting is, as a practitioner and as someone that doesn't really buy into this map, the number one question I'm getting, would you as a somatophile, what do you think that they're asking me? Any clue?
So what's the question they're asking you?
They're all afraid of the swine flu. Everybody's scared, right?
Right.
So the one question, what do I take?
Right.
And my answer has been like McDonald's, a frickin' break. Shut off the TV, shut off the damn radio, stop surfing on the internet, and do three simple jumping jacks. That's my acid test for the immune system. If you can do three simple jumping jacks, you have phasic muscle control, not at the Olympian level, but at the level that microorganisms would not really find comfortable. Because then if your 15 phasic muscle groups are able to move in coordination, of course, your lymphatics will stay clear, you will not promote inflammation in your body, and you will move waste material out. So the virus will, if it does get into your horrible bloodstream, it will find its way out. It will not propagate because it will not find other microorganisms which to munch on. And it's like that simple principle of having harmony in your body, harmony with your... It's almost as if that is too simple. It can't be that easy, one person told me.
Yeah, I would promote that people attempt at all possibility to not get stressed out and produce more cortisol or norepinephrine than their immune system can handle, which is kind of amazing with the sort of phenomenon of the social contagion of fear, that you have huge amounts of cortisol moving through everyone's bodies and their immune systems are down, which essentially for me boils down to an inability to self-regulate, intense feelings of affect as they move through our sort of wired to connect social nature.
Well, I mean, within minutes on the weekend when this started to become a big deal and the CDC was on TV, my Twitter was a flutter, if that's a phrase,
mm-hmm.
with all sorts of crazy links and things going all over the place. One of the things that the holistic side came up with was consume a lot of foods that have vitamin D in it. Get more vitamin D in your diet because
mm-hmm.
That helps with fighting viruses. And one of the biggest sort of red herrings in pediatrics, of course, when they can't figure out what's wrong with a kid, they tell the mother, oh, it's a virus.
Right.
Because they can't find it anywhere.
Right.
So this invisible nucleus-free organism has the best marketing firm possible. Because, like you said, if I could spook you, then, of course, if I put you in a physiology of fear, your immune system automatically gets suppressed because you're not moving too well, and it's not important to have a long-term survival strategy. It's important to get the heck out of there. But if you don't know where it's coming from, you're sort of always in fear. And then you take the susceptible parts of the population, and you put them all together, and you mix them up, and then, of course, they're already crop dusted with everything that's going to keep their immune system pretty much under wraps chemically and all the otherwise. And you're going to get, I think we had, by last count, 30, 40, 50 cases in the States that they're unaware of. There was one death of a child in Texas, I think, this morning that everyone said, that's it, death has crossed the border.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have no clue about that kid. We have no clue about anything that went on other than that kid passed away from what they're diagnosing, which, of course, they never go back and give any more information about that food. So it's like a couple of years ago out here on the East Coast, we had the flesh-eating bacteria was ravaging people in Connecticut. How it knew pick Connecticut and not anywhere else, and only certain people. And you guys actually out west, you've had your brushes with terrorism coming in from Canada, right? Where they've caught some people up there on the border on New Year's Eve and. All the guys with flannel jackets when get their rifles out, and it's like you can put fear in the hearts of people very quickly, very easily, by just giving them something that they don't expect and they have no control over, and that's the combination that gets them on skates. Because, and this is the thing we're going to get into the somatic paradigm here in a minute, is that when you start thinking without feeling and acting in harmony with it, your thoughts can go way far from your body. And again, because you can, all the bodies in the mind, but not all the minds in the body kind of a thing, you can scare yourself pretty much silly. People pay 10 bucks, 12 bucks, I don't know what a movie costs out there, to get scared all summer long. Every blockbuster movie is blown up, smash, bang, the louder the better, overstim the system, right? Sugarfy it, and then go back out in the streets and calm yourself down. So it's like a lot of this stuff is just, to me, just dinner theater. It's sort of like we can't look away. It's almost like, well, you guys, I don't know how much traffic you deal with out on the West Coast, but there's a phenomenon here called rubbernecking.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you're familiar. Okay. And that's a great somatic metaphor for what we're going to have. We're going to make a detour here in a minute, is that people cannot avoid things that are latent with issues of mortality. Anytime there's anything that could threaten life, you're going to pay attention. So if you're going one direction and the accident is in the other direction, you almost can't help but turn your head and go, oh, my God. Not because you're getting some type of vicarious thrill, but because there's a somatic sort of trigger that says, this is a bad area. You probably want to get out of here. Because we have that sort of invisible sense of we can smell when we're in danger. Now, it doesn't mean we're individually in danger, but we could be collectively in danger. And that's really sort of the group hysteria kind of thing that they seem to stir up. But they, in the same vein or the same sentence that they say, swine flu, swine flu, swine flu, they say, don't get alarmed. It's like, then they try to calm you down after they've made you scared. So it's like, I don't know what they really want people to do except ask me questions, what do I take, which is hilarious. But have you had a lot of people even just poking you and tapping you on the shoulder and asking things about this, or you've been pretty much scot-free, as it were, from these swine flu questions?
Yeah, I've been pretty scot-free up here in the Northwest. Bellingham's, it's about a 60,000-70,000 population town. It's pretty small, and it's on the I-5 corridor, 30 minutes south of the Canadian border. So not a lot of action right now happening around the swine flu.
All right, so let's get back to you for a minute here, because we want to get people understanding. You came on board with Blog Talk Radio a couple months ago?
Yes.
Okay. You like it up here? It's a strange beast.
Yeah, and I kind of am completely inconsistent with it, and it's sort of bizarre because, the first couple of shows, actually most of the shows I do, I think most people just download them and listen to them on iTunes later as a podcast. And so it's sort of bizarre just, talking on my phone to no one. being somatic, I like to have a relationship in which to communicate with,
Well, I mean, like, we've always had guests, and we, up until not too long ago, we had a co-host who can't stably anymore, but... we've always had a conversation going on, at least for people to listen to and keep the host engaged, because it is, when you're doing it completely by yourself and there's nobody calling, because this is not, appointment radio. This is podcast 24/7 radio. You definitely, as a somaticist, you definitely go into, what the hell am I doing? Because you're not into the cognizant, you're not into the intellectual blah blah blah. You're not into talking to yourself. So it becomes like, it's like going to the playground, and you're the only one in the playground.
Exactly, exactly.
Once you go on the swings and the slide a couple of times, you go, where's everybody? So it was, that's one of the things that we're going to get into here, because I'm very interested in two sciences. So, somatics, number one, and the other one is called mimetics, which is the science of how ideas get propagated.
Absolutely.
And so when you combine these two extremely poorly developed and poorly shared sort of intelligences, I guess, it's like you get this Reese's peanut butter cup that doesn't have a real good wrapper. And so when you combine, how does something get somebody's attention? Because if you were in a society that was everybody was homogenous and we all got up in the morning and did our Qigong and then we went outside, did our Tai Chi in the square, and then we all went back and did the 2 hours of meditation, and someone came running into the village going, swine flu, swine flu. They would be like, what? Okay, we'll have some more tea. No one would panic. Well, because everybody here is so wired on the environment is the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. Anything that happens in the environment, everyone scurries around like it's the demolition derby. So to get people oriented to the interior, it takes a lot of therapy sometimes. It takes a crisis. It takes pain. Like, I had Martha Eddy on the show a couple months ago. I said, where do you start to get someone into a somatic mode? And she says suffering, pain. That's like the only thing that calls them back. Because I always like, all the other traditional approaches is always about, get them centered on their breath. Well, they get bored with that. So it's like they don't know, because they're not used to processing physical activities with what's going on consciously or what's going on with them on a spiritual level or any of the depth stuff, because it gets into the icky area where they don't know how to communicate. You know, so my question for you starting out is that as you learn this stuff, because this stuff changes you as you learn it. You know, is that when did you sort of kind of leave the shore of the primary paradigm, which is outside in and pretty much environment beats the organism up, sort of orientation? How did you know you were leaving the shore and saying, I sort of question that, I'm going to learn this other thing? And that's why with medics, when you're dealing with ideas, what gets your attention has to do with where the holes in your cheese are, because it's always about what potentially is going to be novel to you or information-laden rather than, I already know about that. That's why you could spin the culture like a top with anything that comes from the outside, because there's no interior sense of balance that we share. We don't develop that. So how did you personally go through that transition in learning about somatics?
That's a good question, and I don't necessarily know how much I think, just as a biological being, I ever actually was ever organized that way. I might have been under the assumption that I was organized that way, but when I started to really slow down and pay attention to what was occurring in me, everything's somatic. Nothing is organized in any other way. Everything in this universe has an interiority. And so I think for me it was just sort of my paradigm, my language didn't match my experience. And so there was a bit of confusion in my existence. And that led me to India, led me to Alaska, led me all around. And finally, after years of seeking, you know, whether it was spiritual enlightenment or some kind of teacher, I realized that what I was seeking was something that I needed to really just sit and develop a relationship with my own physical existence. And so I moved to Bellingham and started to study Aikido, and went back to undergraduate school here and ran into a book called The Theory of the Orgasm by Wilhelm Reich, and got obsessed and started doing Reiki and therapy in 2001 with Dr. Dan Schiff, who's kind of a direct link to the East Coast original orgone therapy. And pretty much the trajectory has been pretty much set since then.
Well, you kind of hit a couple of buttons there. The theory of the orgasm. Most people archiving right now that have absolutely no somatic experience at all went, that sounds like a good book. But when it gets into it, so this is the thing. When you're dealing with all these, and we've had people talk about Alexander and Bowen, all these other somatic pioneers, if you will, is that those guys didn't have to deal with as big and bad of a Western medicine model that we do now. You know, there was much more of a mix between European, Eastern, other philosophies were at play. So that, you know, in the 40s and the 30s and there, you know, when those guys were doing their stuff, it was not 24-hour drugs. It was not, you know, the constant suppression of symptoms. We didn't go from allergy season to flu season to, you know. So you didn't have that in people's heads. So when someone was saying, like this, another big portal for people developing a somatic awareness is martial arts, which has become, I would say, about as popular as things like yoga, Pilates, things like that are body-based. But they very rarely, if you notice, they very rarely get into the interior part of these martial arts. They focus on the physical, self-defense, things like that.
Absolutely.
And they don't get into the meditative aspect of them either, because that gets into the quasi-spiritual religious angle, which gets everybody crazy. So somatics, because it takes you deeper, because it, like I always try to explain using something obvious, like, okay, everyone understands that electricity can be conducted by water, glass, metal, things like that, right? So how do you think consciousness is conducted? And they, of course, that sentence alone, I get the, they're already gone, right? But if I say, look, if you're going to think about what you're going to make for dinner tonight, where do you have to cross over from this dimension here to another dimension to get that thought to be real for you, right? Like, if you can imagine you're going to eat a peach right now and you fake like you're eating it, you get the saliva going in your mouth. Your system is conditioned to go across dimensions. It only goes across dimensions by using its somatic potential, because that's what allows you to go from one state to another, literally within yourself. And people don't understand that because they're so literally bound by the self that the surroundings, this invisible thing, they don't understand they're connected to it. And martial arts is one way to get there, because that is, gives you something that's repetitive, that has some sense of ritual to it, and especially for us, it's from outside the culture. But when you do calisthenics, or when you do stuff that's more westernized and more solid and kind of right in front of you, people don't realize that that too is somatic, because it's fine motor control. So when you're learning a sport, I always say, you know, when you learned how to throw and catch, okay, almost at some point in life, someone learned, teaches you how to throw, teaches you how to catch, right? That conversation you have with people, when you just play catch. I say, you know, you want to learn somatics? Go out in the backyard and play catch. All right? Now, one person has to wear a blindfold. Then you have a real game. And it's like it becomes one of these things where you start to eliminate the things people take for granted. That's when the somatic experience becomes much more than the somatic message. And that's what I think we're missing here in getting the culture to get excited about it, because the sort of the hidden juice, like you found, is that it gives you a sense of your identity that you're not going to get from other people. You're not going to get from your job, your career, your spouse, your heritage, all that other window dressing. Because before people were human, they were somas, when the dinosaurs roamed the earth. And they don't get that, because, like, I'll say a hurricane is a soma. The swine flu is a soma. They don't understand that, because anything that you label with a name is now distinct from everything that's not that. You know, there's a book that actually I was just looking on before the show came on. The book is called, I think it's called Be Yourself. Yeah, Be Yourself Because Everybody Else Is Taken. That's the subtitle. And which I thought was great. And it's, I don't know, I'll try to get the guy to the show now, because the kind of the phrase that pays here on Soma Space on the website, Sometime on the Show, is be yourself and be well. Most people choose one or the other. Mm-hmm. And somatics is trying to teach you to do both. Mm-hmm. You know, so as you, again, you learn all this stuff informally and formally, did you have any difficulty or any resistance when you went back and tried to share it with other people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think part of the art and the skill of you know, being embodied, in my opinion, is really having the accurate language and articulation that can speak not just to other somatists, but also to a general audience who don't experience their body. And that, to me, is the learning curve and the attempt of artistry, so to speak, you know. How do I become present in both my language and my interiority in such a way that it makes contact, genuine contact, with the human that I'm speaking to in such a way that they get it from the inside out? And I think that's a skill for me, at least, that's taking time
that's great. We're both on the same little learning curve, inchworming our way along here. And again, the number is 646-478-4847. You got a question for me or Scott, especially about the swine flu thing. I want to knock this thing out of the park if I can, and just get people freed up here. Is that somatics has been around. Thomas Hanna, I was up in Somatic Central up there in Northampton, Massachusetts about a month and a half ago, sitting knee to knee with, you know, all the people that are his descendants up there at the Somatic Institute. And we're sitting there on a Sunday afternoon. I just came from a science conference down the road. There's about 6-7 of them there. And I'm just going around the room, just, it's like, why is this stuff so unpopular? Why are there more people across the street in that pseudo Starbucks, you know, sucking down the coffee, than in here with us?
Mm-hmm.
And again, they because it's a first-person science, and that's really what somatics is trying to get across, and that's what Thomas Hanna's work was all about, is that we're taught to observe from the outside, label from the outside, judge from the outside, measure from the outside, and attempt to suppress the internal experience because subjectivity is not scientific. That's basically been the paradigm forever.
I think it could also be a species evolutionary issue,
mm-hmm.
kind of like a kind of bodies in revolt, right? Where I actually think that a lot of the somatic life prior to modernization and the Industrial Revolution were sort of capacities that everyone might have known about but didn't need to communicate because they were instinctual and they were not conscious, but they were just sort of followed
mm-hmm.
by the fact that we're descendants of biology and mammals. And I think because of modernity, somatics as a field is starting to have to respond intensely. What a better time than to study what makes us most human from the inside out in response to the increasing amount of disembodiment that our now environment, much like Marshall McLuhan, the environment has now extended so into our interiority that we can't distinguish between what makes us human and what makes us machine. And I actually think that we're now at a point evolutionarily that we're having to make our intuition, our instinctual and innate biological mammalian behavior more robust and more musculature, and somatics is the Western paradigm that can do that. Whereas, you know, in the East, they've had these sort of techniques for thousands of years. And I really think that somatics is a profound response to the fact that we're really changing rapidly and we don't even know what the hell's going on anymore.
Well, it's faster than we can perceive because nanotechnology is faster than we can process. So what's funny, we just had a caller blip in and blip out. If you're there, call, give us a call back. We'll get you on the air. I don't know if you got disconnected or what. But the funny part is, as you watch it, like movements like artificial intelligence, they're attempting and they're getting closer and closer at making the machines more humanistic in the way that they act. I was thinking of an iRobot movie. The electric sheep and all the other metaphors that are out there on the AI side. And we, as human beings, are becoming more receptive to being closer to, they call them technological memes or basically part of a bigger machine. That metaphor of the machine or the brain as a computer and all these other things that have come in from that awareness or that culture. And now, like you said, when we are indoctrinated or immersed in that paradigm, we think of ourselves as replaceable parts. So why is it so difficult to think about, you know, almost like installing software? It's like we've become sort of like the tower that the computer is housing, and everything that's on the interior comes from the outside, and there's a programmer that puts information in us, and we've become sort of hollow there. So the ghost in the machine that is the somatic awareness that we're talking about here has become more explicit and more necessary because in the beginning it was tacit knowledge. It was sort of what everyone just kind of knew but couldn't. But now it almost needs to be, given some lyrics to the instrumental so that people can actually understand and appreciate it, because otherwise they will, almost by just attrition, just by being exposed to the same message all the time, they will perceive themselves to be this carbon-based, you know, organism that travels along this linear plane and then slides off the planet after 75, 80 years, and there's nothing they can do about it. It's just like watching, you know, a bunch of iron filings being pulled along. So,
I think the issue actually goes beyond just the individual perception. For instance, I work with a population of women in Bellingham here who are essentially in a lockdown facility. Their choice is either juvie hall or this lockdown facility. It's a drug rehab. They all come in. They're between the ages of 14 and 19. And these women are, in my opinion, studying somatics, the product of, say, five generations of the lowest economic stratosphere in America and disembodiment. So what we have here is a generation who are now born addicted, empty, and in the hungry ghost mode for their early life. Not only that, the attachment disruptions that these women have are just amazing. And what I'm seeing is that through evolution, we're now breeding out the original attachment bonds because our behavioral systems are so sensitive from generation to generation, right? Love is the vehicle that supports biological growth and formation. And in these women, literally, I see it in their face, I see it in their intelligence, and I see it in their body. They're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that I've worked with them is purely somatic, and I saw these women go from completely dysregulated, hungry ghost types to, within 10 weeks, I just supported their biology. I didn't do talk therapy with them. I didn't throw a bunch of ideas at them. I just supported their biology. And neurogenesis is much like plant growth, right? You plant some seeds. It takes a while for the seeds to pop up. You put it in the ground, and then it still takes a while. And I think the biggest thing is that the time scale of the body is much slower than the neocortex, the media, et cetera. But within 10 weeks, I had these women self-regulate, not necessarily without PTSD, but beginning to be able to process or metabolize their PTSD of just being born in their existence they had.
All right, now, for the benefit of the archivers and the critics, define self-regulating.
Well, self-regulating, you know, from the somatic standpoint, is the capacity or the ability to flexibly move from one side of the autonomic nervous system to the other without being stuck in either. It's the ability to, in a face of intense emotional movement, to stay grounded, present in sensation and breath. That doesn't mean not feeling it. It just means the ability to move it or to tolerate it as the feeling moves.
Okay. And the irregular listeners to this broadcast will recognize that as experiencing coherence. And again, this is something that is not complicated to do, but it's complex in its infrastructure. But it is about, as one of the old catchphrases that we do here, it's called living in the rhythm. And when you're living in the rhythm, there's that flow, like he's just talking about there, that you do not have to override. You do not have to intervene on it. It's there intrinsically all the time. It's in your pulse. It's in your breathing. It's in the twitching of your muscles. It's all there. At a certain point, it's just like, you know, if you're out in a club dancing, you're part of the dance floor. You're part of the audience in the movie theater. You're part of the traffic flowing in the street. There's a sense of being sort of pulled along by the tide kind of a thing. And when people are traumatized, they lose that awareness, and it's almost like they can't merge with the traffic. They can't sort of join with the music. They can't sort of get themselves into whatever they're doing because they're preoccupied with, in this case, post-traumatic stuff. Or some people are riddled with fear, and they can't go forward. So there's that sort of invisible gridlock they're in. And somatics gives you a way to kind of gypsy cab your way around all that stuff because it gives you back the things that that Scott's talking about that the culture sort of discounted or de-emphasized early on in favor of, you know, the more visual, the speedy, the more extrinsic the tools that we sort of download into people, as another computer metaphor. And that is, it's brain candy. We like that. It makes things go faster and easier and more. It has more pictures. Is going to be more celebrated, more well received than the kinesthetic stuff that you're talking about, especially when it brings up emotions that people don't want to feel.
Well, you know, I think that's kind of, you know, it's a sort of bizarre thing, and I think a lot of it for me in what I study, you know, kind of the relational somatics, which is definitely West Coast movement, sort of been a big thing, is that essentially and a lot of the science coming out of like Daniel Goleman's work on social intelligence and, you know, all of the new interpersonal neurobiology, that we're wired to connect. We're in a complete feedback loop in our relationships. And it's almost inseparable, the emotional energy that can pass between two people in rapport. And I think that we're essentially terrified of each other. And so the relatedness channels are becoming filled with sort of modernity and modern perception and replaced in an attempt to maintain sort of narcissistic alienation from the deepest existential dilemma. It's sort of a bizarre thing because we're painting ourselves into a corner of alienation within our own lives. It's just sort of a bizarre thing.
Well,
but simultaneously,
you sort of filled in your own blank there, because why would they? You know, again, it's almost like if you're going to go into that dark alley there with no headlights, you can't kind of, there's no instructions. The other way, there's a lot of enabling, you know, mechanisms that are going to keep you out there, but the direction you're trying to take them, it's like terra incognita. I can't go there. I don't know how to be there. It's sort of a, you know, it's almost like the abyss.
And I think this is exactly where somatics comes in, and in my opinion, what I study is that we're not meant to get in there alone and stay alone, and we need help getting out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where it's sort of revolutionary, is that, for me, forget the Eastern idea of enlightenment, the one individual who enlightens and separates from this entire reality or merges or whatever the idea is. I almost think that in our day and age, we need a new mythos, a new metaphor, and that to me is relational enlightenment. The capacity to stay human and stay present with one another in the face of our tragedies or our broken hearts and our joy and our sorrow, but be with each other as humans should be. We're mammals.
Well, this is the stuff that's, you take a book like Goldman's book, Social Intelligence, right? It's purely about the bottom-up sort of primitive biology catching hold of the social atmosphere and saying, hey, this is something that's wired into us from the beginning. Again, being mammals, all that other stuff. And yet it is promoted, it is scientifically reviewed as more brain cognitive stuff than it is body intelligence stuff. I find it fascinating that he says somatic in there a couple of times, you know, in 200 pages or so. But the brain is a seller. The brain has good PR. It's like the viruses. You know, you say brain, people go, oh,
right,
that must mean that matters over there. Because if you say social brain, which is Porges' work in somatics,
right,
it deals with how mother-child bonds, it develops a social nervous system, right? That gets attention too. We just had Autism Day about a month ago, talking about the developmental aspects of that and the interconnection between parent-child, environment, culture, all that stuff, and how that gets pushed through the talk show circuit. But if we went on a talk show, especially about stuff like this, and we're talking about it from the standpoint of not making it all cognitive, not making it all the head stuff, and making it much more kind of like a fruit stand. You know, it's like this is something that's visceral. This is something that has, you know, a lower order to it in terms of if we're going to stack everything vertically and make, you know, the brain and the thought supreme and actions and feelings sort of subservient, which the scientists don't. They make them all equal, but, you know, developmentally, I guess you can say one is more simple, one's more complex, which I don't even think thought is really that complex anymore. The more I look at it, most people have, like, you know, not that many thoughts in their head that are really, really worth sharing. It's like the same thoughts in a gumball machine going around their head. And like we had last week with Frank Mosca, it's like the questions they're asking themselves are so repetitive, then they wonder why their answers are so repetitive. And because, again, if you cut everything off from the neck down and you don't want to feel, or, of course, if you jack it up a lot and you want to feel way too much and distort it, there's no balance there. And then that sort of head-body oscillation that people go through, especially when they're dealing with body-based psychotherapy or anything that involves, like, psychodrama, all these kind of, like, theatrical psychology modalities that are out there now. I always kind of go back to square one, and I'm like, if there was a way to get them from movement to stillness, which is a fundamental, you know, I think that's every culture that deals with that, and then get them beyond those two sort of players and get them into being centered so that those two options are not polar opposites, but they're extensions of the same awareness. At that point, you don't have to worry about, you know, what the content is. And if people get stuck in the content, I think there's 250 allied health disciplines out there, and I think there's 400 different types of psychotherapy out there right now. I don't know if we need any more maps.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think we've papered the elephant.
I teach up at the university here,
okay,
here at Western Washington University. And I teach a class that it's called Embodied Futures, and it's essentially asking some of the questions that, you know, about modernity and the encroachment and appropriation of our interiority and how it's for sale, and, you know, they kind of rip it out of us and then they sell it back to us and leave us empty while our souls are sort of bankrupt. And so it's asking these questions, and what I find is The way I teach is from the bottom up. The first 5 weeks of the class is essentially all somatics. And no matter how much I can communicate verbally and bring out as much explicit content as and maps as possible, what I find that when people really get it is it takes about 5 weeks. And I think it takes about five weeks of consistent exploration and maintaining curiosity about the present moment. And what I find is that our minds are now in this sort of insane time frame that places insane expectations on the pacing of the body. But the body is from the earth, it's plant life. And you ever watch blossoms come up in the springtime, they take their time.
Well, I just said 5 weeks. If you go into any of these 24-hour drugstores here, it's 5 seconds. I mean, 5 weeks. You know, someone's going to take you 5 weeks to get this process done. They're already, you know, running around with their hair on fire. They're running away from you. As that caller, who just called in again and hung up in, I think, 10 seconds this time, call back again if you get disconnected. I don't know what the problem is, but 646-478-4847. Give me 10 seconds to get you on the air next time, please. I'll get you on the air to ask you a question here. If it's a disconnect, then with it, that's what it is. But I just thought it was kind of funny. You're talking 5 weeks, and the caller was there for maybe 3 seconds and then hung up. You know. And again, because we're in a culture that speed sells, the faster you can get someone, if you can give someone instant relief, I mean preemptive relief, they'll buy it no matter what the side effects are, no matter what the downside is, because that's what they want. They want that state back of security. And if you tell them this is a process, like physical therapy is a great example, because they have ingrained in their clinical circle that it's going to be a month, it's going to be 6 weeks, it's going to be 8 weeks. They tell you up front, right? And
right.
You go to your therapy 3, 4, 5 times a week, whatever it is, and it's like people, just like people being in prison. They just count down the days. Oh, I have 6 more days of therapy. But when
right,
you're dealing
right.
with depression, when you're dealing with people that are dealing with mental health issues,
right.
There's no calendar that says you're done. You know, so it's like if you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you're bipolar, it isn't going to be 8 weeks, it's going to be 6 weeks. It's going to be, well, we're going to try this drug next, and we're going to try this approach next. And there's no there. There's no B. There's an A and no B.
Right.
We've sort of split the beam, mental and physical, all the time.
Right. It's interesting, to note that, you know, in my opinion, And a lot of what I look at, you know, of course, I'm a big fan of the brain, but the thing that's beautiful about the brain is that it's in the body. And there's no brain without a body, and there's no body without a brain. It's an unbreakable circle. And I think that the PR we're going to have to do is so much, you know, is basically there is no body without a brain and no brain without a body, and that neurogenesis and neuroplasticity reveals that we're meant to develop and unfold from birth to death. And as long as we're aligned with that unfolding in that sort of oscillating tidal wave of change, growth, development, and maturation, sovereignty, creativity, and unique individual expression, I think when we're on board with that, our well-being and our health is innate and intact. And this is the insanity of our era, is that we still consider well-being and health to be this sort of, you know, micro bits of issues. There's something wrong and broken, and I think this comes back down into something's wrong and broken with me, something's wrong and broken with my body, something's wrong and broken in general. And we continually are then sold all of the remedies. All of the remedies. I mean, talking about human resource, here we are. We're the ones being farmed.
Now you got the Matrix in my head. I mean, well, we're again, that's part of that survival mechanism to protect yourself. And that's why when people run around with the swine flu in their head, they feel the need to, you know, wear the masks and get off the streets and wipe your hands and germs. And because, again, the threat is that I'm not enough to handle whatever is out there. There's no credit for what goes on inside me here. It's only more about basically giving the world its due, and I get no due, and I just see the paradigm being the same. We talk about salutogenesis once in a while here, the origin of well-being, and it's instead of pathologizing everything, instead of making everything about disease, because I basically have put those two words together. Health and disease to me are, they're two false gods, because mm-hmm. nobody gets into any one, either one of those for very, like I say, you know, tell me someone you know who's healthy. And the minute they tell me, well, and then they'll start describing what's wrong with them. And it's
right.
like, because you're never perfect, see? And then the other, if you're not dead, then the disease hasn't killed you yet, so you're just afflicted. So I try to get the principle across to them. This is a somatic kind of like skee ball here, but to talk about vitality, because someone could be alive but not well, and that doesn't
right.
really kind of like it doesn't fit into the Western diagnostic model, because if you walk in asymptomatic to a medical doctor, they don't do with you. They don't know how to get you any better than that. They don't know how to do anything. They just basically look at you as a nuisance. But if you walk in and work with someone that's dealing with a somatic approach, they're going to discover your strengths and try to enhance them and try to advance you beyond that point, and there's no ceiling. So it
right.
becomes more
right.
about optimization than it is about normalization or standardization or basically keeping you in this sort of ambiguous asymptomatic soup until something crops up that's wrong with you, that
mm-hmm.
like the volunteer fire department kind of a mindset,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we got a couple more minutes left. If the caller is still circling around in New York City in a bad cell area, there's a 347 area code. Give us a shout here at 646-478-4847. Because, again, what we're trying to get done tonight is to just get you to understand, first of all, what a soma is, and we'll get Scott's definition here in a moment. And once you know that you are one, then what? If we get that done in this hour, then when you're tooling down the road listening to this on the iTunes or whatever, we've done our job here. So for the masses that are just confused, define to them, in your words, what a soma is.
A soma is essentially the sheath that contains our entirety of our interior experience.
Okay. I like sheath. All right. And for those of you guys that just went, huh? basically, you blood buckets out there walking around thinking that you're separate from the universe you're in. What a soma really consists of on a scientific level is something that it is a self-referencing, self-experiencing sensory-motor system. If the word system is not in the definition, then you don't have feedback loops and you don't have all that stuff. So different from a body, which could be dead or alive, or a mind, which could be there or not there, a soma is present until it's absent. So when you think of a storm coming through, like when they name a hurricane like Katrina, right, here it comes, right? And here comes the swirling mass of Katrina. At a certain point, the hurricane Katrina becomes Tropical Storm Katrina. And then Tropical Storm Katrina becomes a bunch of probably, you know, scattered showers until it goes out to sea and passes away. That's us. That's your life. You're born, you're formed, you peak, and then you fade into the black. And as you pass through that somatic sort of coil, you have a definition. You have a distinct sort of presence in the environment. You're the only one. Like that book says, be yourself, as everyone else is taken. And that's your true identity. But most of us go by the name and not by what's inside that name. And somatics gives you a kind of a neat way to kind of unlock that and have more of an open identity that includes the terrain that you cross over as you live your life. So it's like, you know, if I had grown up in Timbuktu and Scott had grown up in Australia, the conversation tonight would have been completely different because our experiences, our paths, everything else would have been different. We would have been the same DNA, same all that, but the conversation because of our backgrounds and what it influences would have been different. You know, we've had people on the show that come from outside the Western culture. They don't understand a whit of why we get so scared of things. Because that's not their experience. So it somatics in its essence, I mean, Hannah says it. Somatics is experience, and it's like if you get into that mindset of that this is a science that gives you access to alter that experience, upgrade it, make it more whole, make it more shareable, make it more intimate. Why wouldn't you go for that? Why is it so damn hard to get you guys into the pool? Water's fine, you know. And Scott's on an academic plane over there, teaching at school. It tends to get dry really quick because you're taking the person off the roller coaster ride, and you're describing the physics and you're describing the architecture, but you're not on the roller coaster. So
yeah, it's like talking about a map of India and being in India, two very different things.
Yeah, the smelling India, right? Exactly. Yeah, and that's what I think what's difficult about. Especially in a visually oriented culture that is decidedly more cognitive than it is visceral. It's only visceral when they're in a movie theater or when they're trying to escape. That's why I kind of focused on how people unwind rather than what winds them up. It's again, this is one of those things that maybe you and I would be sort of on the outside looking in on, is that when people have a choice point that comes up, how are you gonna deal with this, like a what if kind of thing, especially when you're dealing with the way the culture is right now, is that when you ask them a what if question about the future, they have to go inside to get the answer, but they don't know where they're going inside. Now, I don't know if you have a background in, like, I have a background in NLP and more behaviorally oriented in the way that I work. It's like if they notice that, it's not what you know in your head that's going to get you out of that question, a what-if question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the left brain doesn't do what-if. So when you ask someone a what-if question, like what do you want to do in the next 5 years, they don't have an answer in their left brain. They don't. They only have is memories to now. Planning and doing and all the other things that are more creative has to come from your gut brain and your heart, and not so much your head. So to give people that sort of movie meditation, if you will, to do for themselves, it's like, what are you going to create today? And if you give them that as not something to say, but something to do, as something to do on the inside, now you're practicing somatics. Now you're just as advanced as in this paradigm as me and Scott, because there are no black belts here. You know, every moment basically is unique for you as it is for me. And if we're not, if we're somatically indifferent in moment 47, well, that could be the one we fall through the manhole cover. You know, so this is a sort of a it's all a free will. Well, free will has to pay attention. It's kind of the bridge I'm trying to get across to you guys here. And you know, Scott's work as at this point. He's focused on how education and semantics can come together. Your show pretty much airs on Monday afternoons, I think?
Yeah, Monday at 11.
Okay, Monday at 11, which is 2 o'clock East Coast time.
Yeah, and a lot of what I focus on is liberation.
Okay.
And liberation, I think, is the driving force that will bring somatics to the fore of the popular mind. Is the sense and the necessity for all of biology to move towards liberation.
And again, this is one of those things where you're gonna deal with people that don't feel free, like those women you were talking about before, that are wrapped up in memory. So they're wrapped up in recall. They're wrapped up in their own issues in the tissue, so to speak.
Yeah,
And to unwind them from that, you have to get them to be centered again, so that their future becomes compelling. Otherwise, they repel from their future because it seems like it's going to be more of the same. And that's why people are running to the drugstore 24 hours a day, because the future is something that they're not compelled by. And systematically, we're always trying to go forward. Your nose is in front of your face, not on top of your head. You're always trying to go forward. And when a soma, like a storm, hits, resistance, it begins to break itself down. That's premature aging, and that's the burnout, and that's all the stuff we experience because we're not lifting ourselves up as high as we can be on a somatic level so that we can overcome those barriers, and you can't do it alone. It's like the Bob Dylan thing, you can't make love all by yourself, kind of a thing. And that's why this show is playful with this concept and trying to get that across, so that you have a break during the week. Like I said, what do I take? Take a freaking break. Is that when you're in your head all day long, bouncing around, your mind can put a lot of things on the plate there and have you consider them, right? and the word consider, work with the stars, right? But your body doesn't have to respond to everything that's presented to it that way. It doesn't have to give it as much credibility. And because we're so, you know, sort of top-heavy with that in the way the world works, we're constantly reacting to things that are essentially just fire drills, not real fires. And we have an instinct for that. And that's why we talked about rubbernecking and some other things tonight. So going 360 degrees, we kind of covered a lot of ground here. What would you say your students, the people you work with, the people you talk with inside and outside the somatic circle, what do you think is the number one misconception that people have about A, you and your work, and B, somatics in general?
That's a good question. I would say beginner students, when they first are introduced even to the thought, are super excited about the work. But I think there's this assumption that what I'm experiencing in myself is somehow more supernatural than, say, what they're experiencing or what they could potentially experience within themselves. I think just in the nature of just talking about it, talking about the feeling of being grounded, right? That feels really nice to be grounded and to be open. That would probably be the first major conception I would see, misconception I would see. You know, people that are drawn to it, you know, it's like they're drawn to it because they're tired of suffering. Or they already have an inclination towards embodiment, but they might not have the language or the exercises to increase the musculature of that interiority. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I mean, that's, you gave the answer like a professor. It's like, is that, this is a, what you're trying to get at is that the process that people go through, and again, just take anything people enjoy. Like I always go, do you like peanut butter or jelly? Pick one, okay? When you're actually in that experience, you're with that substance or whatever that you're interfacing with it, okay? With your child, whatever. And at that point, you let go of the boundary. You let go of that border between inside and outside, and there's an eternity there instead of an internal and an external. And somatics is about opening you up to that on a regular basis instead of on an arbitrary basis. And that's the biggest misconception I get, is that people think of it as some type of a, you know, almost like a cult in a way.
It's like it's an addition, or like it's a new and improved treatment plan, or it's like the best new shampoo.
Yeah, it's something extra. Actually, you know, we're sort of the no-frills. We're sort of the... you know, we're not JetBlue. We're sort of like Southwest Airlines. We're sort of like no-frills airlines. It's like...
It's absurdly simple.
Yes, that's... And again, like I started the show with, the jumping jacks, can it really be that simple? I said, you know, well, look around. There's 600 and something... seven and a half billion people on the planet? Okay, so if it was that difficult, we would be dying in droves if it was that complicated to figure out. And that's why if you respect that the intelligence knows more than you, it's tacit, like we said before, you sort of give in to that, and then by sort of, you know, surrendering to the ridiculous in a way, that you don't have to know everything to figure it out, its presence becomes more obvious to you, and then you start to do the next step, which is to appreciate it. One is to accept it, and then to appreciate it, which is probably take most people, the majority of their lifetime to do one of those two steps, but hopefully here on the show we kind of kicked a couple of these stones off their path for them so that they can get there a little sooner. So
that's one of the kind of approaches essentially that you just said that I really enjoy working with is I think in our culture, you know, especially, you know, I'm teaching, so a lot of the focus in our world is on what we know. You know, what do I know? And then we want to repeat to one another what we know. But I'm kind of curious for myself and in general about the students that I work with. Well, what do you not know? What are you curious about? What are you willing to plunge into that you don't know? And I think it's interesting to play around with that level of inquiry, is to walk somewhere throughout your day and wonder what you don't know, and then work with the internality. Just like what, you get anxious, you feel insecure, you feel vulnerable. Wow, you're having an experience. That's a somatic experience, that vulnerability, that insecurity, that every human, 6.5 billion humans, are also feeling vulnerable, insecure, insufficient, contracted, not good enough. And hey, all of a sudden we have a communication, and we opened up, and all of a sudden we're sharing an experience, a human experience, that brings us together.
The unconscious competence goes from fear to excitement at that point, you know, and then you're moving on to actually going through the next step, which is to be consciously incompetent, to know what you don't know, and now I got to freaking learn something. Oh, my God, ouch, I'm thinking again. And it's like and that's why somatics is it really emphasizes the second half of this statement, self discovery. It gets you into the discovery mode rather than recovery, rather than constantly repairing and going backwards and going back into the present empty moment. You're going, wow, there's more. Wow, there's more. And there's a primal awe in there that kids have, for a little while anyway. And it's something to be nurtured. It's something to be, respected even, because if it's not there, life becomes really, really long and just gray. And then, like, people get into repetitive stress because they don't have anything else better to do, you know. And that's why what you're talking about here is something that I hope we got across in this hour, that Scott and I can talk about this without the radio show and have a good time with it. Hope you guys benefited from listening to us tonight. And, again, that call at 347, if you hit a Bridget Buttman or you couldn't call us back, try again next week or drop us an email at nakedsummer.gmail.com with the email there. And if you have any questions for Scott, I'll be happy to, forward it over to him. So, I want to thank you, Scott, for popping on here for an hour and giving us your spiz. And, anything we can do to help you out on the Monday show, just let me know, and we'll definitely cross paths again.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you calling and your interest, and it's great to meet another person who's just as passionate about this subject as I am. So, tally-ho, let's continue the PR.
Spiral on, my brother.
Okay, take care.
Take care. All right, so there goes Scott. And, again, this is one of those shows that I generally appreciate doing, because I don't get an opportunity to talk to somebody who's out there doing the same thing I'm doing very, very often. And we've had a couple in the last month, and it's been really kind of edifying for me, because, boy, it gets a little lonely in Somerville once in a while. Right, right, Tom?
I got a bad liver and a broken heart.
That's right. And all you fellas down there at the CDC working us over.
You filthy criminies.
That's right. All right, so we're going to wrap it up here. Next week, we take a little detour, and we're going to take a little trip to Nutrition Town. Oh, boy. Philip Eats. We're going to have Denise Marion from Organic Avenue and talk a little hemp. Hemp for the clothes. Hemp for the garden. And maybe she has something to say about how a natural person, a natural woman, approaches something like the swine flu, which by next week we might be hip-deep in. Who knows? So for everybody here at Summertime, which is just about me, thanks for joining us this week, and we will see you again next Wednesday at 9. And if it's Wednesday, it must be Summertime. Spiral on, my friends.
Because I have friends, and that's a fact, like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack. Forget about them, let's go into the story about our girl named blah, 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 that adore me. So we started talking, getting familiar, spending a lot of time so we can build a relationship or some understanding how it's going to be in the future we was planning. Everything sounded so dandy and sweet. I had no idea I was in for a treat. After this was established, everything was cool. The tour was over and she went back to school. I call every day to see how she was doing. Every time that I call her, it seemed something was brewing. I called the room, a guy picked up, and then I called her and I said, yo, who is that? Oh, he's just a friend.
Now.
And you got what I need.
college on a surprise visit to see my girl that was so exquisite. It was a school day. I know she was there the first semester of the school year. I went to a gate to ask where was the dorm. This guy made me fill out a visitor's form. He told me where it was, and I was on my way to see my baby girl. I was happy to say I arrived in front of the dormitory. Yo, could you tell me where is door 3? They showed me where it was for the moment. I didn't know I was in for such an event, so I came to a room and opened the door. Oh, snap! Guess what I saw? I felt a tongue kissing my girl in the mouth. I was so in shock, my heart went down south. So please listen to the message that I sent. Don't ever talk to a girl who says she just has a friend. Has a friend. Has a friend.
Oh, baby.